Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Early on, I've always talked about being nimble in the work that I do, and you know, I find that sometimes nonprofits resist that word, and so I feel like now, you know, with all these changes week to week, it's just been really interesting to see. I think they now are seeing the value of being nimble and coming up with new ideas and maybe not necessarily just locking in on something and sticking with it because it might not work next week.
Exactly right. It's these are days that require flexibility and leadership should be flexible. So let me officially start the episode now by saying, hello, this is Mickey Desai. I'm your host for this episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. I'm very happy to be talking with Emily Taylor today. Emily, could you quickly introduce yourself for us?
Sure. My name is Emily Taylor. I'm the principal of Teeny Big, and I help nonprofits turn their lukewarm followers into passionate supporters.
What is Teeny Big exactly?
Teeny Big is a consultancy that comes out of my experience in human-centered design and really helping nonprofits focus on their audiences and ways to engage them.
Okay. And it was the term human-centered design that I think originally caught my eye. What does human-centered design mean? I mean, are we talking about, I mean, this is my pedestrian question, right? Are we talking about website design? Are we talking about branding? Are we talking about the way I put the office together?
It really could be all of those. So human-centered design is a process, and it's a process for getting feedback and really understanding how people are processing information in order to find solutions that really work. And so my background is actually in product design, doing a lot of consumer products and really using human-centered design to figure out what motivates people to pick something up off the shelf and take it home with them and purchase it again. But I've always been so passionate about the nonprofit world that over the last couple of years, I've been lucky to have a chance to laterally shift and use some of those strategies and translate them for nonprofits. So, you know, in the nonprofit space, we're using human-centered design to look at what I call the user's experience. So, you know, an audience member might not be thinking about your website differentiated from your programs and your emails. They're really looking at the whole thing together. And so I use human-centered design as a way to be strategic and think about how, you know, what aspects do you need to address when we look at your audience's perspective? You know, is it the way you're communicating, language and need? Is it your website? Is it the way you're presenting programs? How can we look at it holistically and from the audience's perspective to really make it the most engaging for them?
So human-centered design really is sort of all-encompassing. It's everything about the way a nonprofit presents itself, all the way down to how the nonprofit conducts its programs.
Yeah, and really it's just human-centered design is a process to get to those solutions. So yeah, it really can be used in a wide variety of ways, which we can certainly talk about.
Where does human-centered design come from?
Human-centered design is a process that's been around for a long time. It really comes out of a lot of, you know, for-profit understanding consumer perspectives, but it's being used a lot right now in the web and digital world because there's a lot of ways you can quickly put a variety of things in front of people, have them use algorithms to understand how they're interpreting things and what works. So it does take some translation to, you know, work it into services and more nonprofit focused work like advocacy. I don't know if that answered your question.
It kind of answers my question. I mean, I guess, you know, to some degree, taking a historical perspective at this, it's like we're looking at a world of technology that has developed so fast, and yet it's easy to lose sight of the end user and lose sight of what it is that keeps the experience easy for them to get into.
Yeah, and it's obviously much, you know, I think for-profit companies have had a lot of motivation to do that because it sells more products. And I think it's just taken a little more time in the nonprofit space, but it's very valuable. And I can talk a few reasons I think it's really valuable for nonprofits.
Yeah, sure. Please do.
Sure. So, again, when we talk about the history of human-centered design, you've seen it most recently in the for-profit space in the way companies like Starbucks and Uber have really listened and watched and observed consumers and sort of predicted, like changing the taxi system. People didn't really ask for that. They just looked and saw the frustration people had with ordering taxis and were able to come up with new solutions to address, how quickly you can get a taxi, where is it at, how much is it going to cost, and address some of those things. And so when we look at it in the nonprofit space, there's three reasons I find that nonprofits need to be looking at this. And one is people are just getting more used to organizations listening to them, like I just mentioned with Uber and Starbucks. And so there's this shift from a top-down model to a bottom-up model. A top-down model is where, there's a really strong leader with a very clear vision and everyone just falls in line. But you don't necessarily get everyone who's, everyone who's a part of that organization's feedback. And so there's a shift to being more bottom-up. How do we listen to everyone who's, all of our stakeholders, everyone who's involved in our organization, and see not just what the experts have to say, but also what the people who are a part of it have to say. And one example I give of this is you can really see this change in healthcare. So typically you would think of a doctor as being the health expert. They tell you exactly, what medicine you need to take, how many shots you need, and the patient is supposed to listen. But if we don't take account the patient's point of view, we lose sight of the fear they might be facing in getting certain treatments and maybe be hesitant to even get them. We lose sight of what their life is like and how hard is it to implement some of these, the taking of medicine every day, those kind of things. So when we take in that point of view, we realize that the healthcare system could actually provide more emotional support or simplifying the language so that the patient really understands the work. And so that is a way you can be more bottom up is taking in those, maybe less expert cues like fear and understanding and integrating those into your work to make the impact more valuable.
I see. So again, forgive me for the silly question here, but it sounds like we're talking a combination of not just visual design cues, but maybe even some policy changes as well, right? So like if on a website, I needed to improve the design of my website and I wanted to make it more customer centric, there are things I could do with color or placement of various things on the website or, various calls to action here and there. But in terms of changing the way the nonprofit may interact with its stakeholder groups, that may involve some policy changes. That may involve, procedural changes that are hinging upon new policies. Am I completely wrong here?
Yeah, no, you're right. And that's, I think the term design and human-centered design is a little confusing because it's not the traditional, just visual design. It's really, creating something new, which could be anything from a visual to a program or a policy.
Interesting. So what other examples can you think of of a nonprofit that puts some of these principles into play?
Well, I was going to also talk, there's two other reasons that I find nonprofits need to human-centered design.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. The second is the curse of knowledge. And I find as I work with nonprofits, the staff is so expert at what it takes to do to make the impact that they need to meet their mission, that sometimes they lose sight of newer people coming into their world and they don't understand, all the higher level work that needs to be done. Mm-hmm. And so I use human-centered design as well to get them out of the bubble. So sometimes it involves like listening to different users really hearing the language that they're using when they talk about an issue. I use this just as a general example. If you think of environmental work, a lot of times it's very big picture. And, if you think about explaining the polar ice caps to someone who, is just trying to get their kids to school and get to work, and hasn't really been thinking about things outside of their local neighborhood. You need some translation there. You can't just really start talking, you know, big picture.
Right.
And so how do we listen to bring in some of that user feedback and understand where they're at and how you need to communicate to them at that time? And then the last area is what I call unknown motivators. So, you know, if you've ever put out a survey to your audience and got feedback and then implemented exactly what people said, like, oh, they want, you know, free tickets on Fridays, that'll get them in, and then they don't show up. That is because, you know, we're human and we don't always know exactly what motivates us. And so a big part of human-centered design is prototyping and testing. And this is a way to understand what actually motivates people. So one example of work that I've done is I worked with an advocacy organization where we listened to just a wide variety of people in their audience and listened to how they framed the challenge that this organization was facing. And then I created some mock-up ads, you know, with tag, some sort of, you know, action item and some imagery that had different levels of emotion and statistics. And then we put that out as a survey and really got feedback from people on like what engaged them most, what did they find compelling and why. And that helped us then design a campaign using the language that they used and as well as figuring out what, you know, kind of prototyping and throwing out some different directions and allowing them to tell us what is working.
Mm-hmm. Right. And with that data, you make some changes or tweaks and move forward.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's a lot, you know, rather than sort of making it internally, allowing users to help you make those decisions. And again, they always need to be mission focused. It doesn't mean that you allow
your
audience to totally guide you. But at least you know how they're going to react to it before you send it out.
We started this conversation with talking about flexibility and being nimble. I mean, how does a nonprofit stay nimble with that stream of data? Like if they're actually in a position to allow the user to experience to change the way they do business, how does a nonprofit do that? How do they stay flexible?
Well, I think they need to find more nimble ways to be getting this user feedback. I ran into a local nonprofit. They were telling me they just had gotten out of a 2-year audience research study. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, how much can change in 2 years? And so, you know, there's sort of this balance between how thorough and deep are you going and how quickly and nimbly are you getting that feedback? And so, especially now, I always encourage nonprofits to loosen some of their, I'm trying to think of the right word, to just not be as stringent about how thorough they're being and look at, you know, again, it's a balance. You don't want to be completely loose, but when speed is a factor and being nimble is a factor like it is right now, you know, finding ways to get feedback from your audience, you know, whether it's responding to an email blast, whether it's, you know, finding people who are following you on social media and just asking if they have a few minutes to answer some questions, having, you know, calling up donors and having deeper conversations, even if they're small donors, getting that feedback and just being in touch with people, even if it's, again, not like a thorough study, it gives you insight into where people are at. And what you want to be doing is collecting that over time so you can kind of see how people are changing and how you might need to adjust.
Okay, interesting. So the last note that you made on your list of bullet points for me today was, what is an experience and why should nonprofits be thinking about the experiences of their audience? I think we've already answered that question, haven't we?
Yes. Yeah. That definitely goes back to thinking holistically. And one way I example I give people, or a question I ask people to get in that mindset is, you know, think about, although it's very hard right now, you know, think about your favorite restaurant and why it is your favorite, because it's not just about the food. And when you start to really think about that and observe, you know, whether it's the friendliness of the waiter, the chef that comes out and tells you a story about the recipe, you know, the people that know your name, the decor, you know, the music, it's all those things put together, and you're not sitting there separating those out in your head. You are just experiencing the restaurant. And so I ask, you know, nonprofit leaders to think about that when they're, you know, however they're engaging with their audience. Can you, you know, think more holistically or ask questions to get that more holistic perspective? Because sometimes it's something silly and, you know, an article they read in the paper, experience, you know, dirty bathroom, just something that is not
right
on your mind that sticks with them. And you want to really address those things, especially when they're easy to solve.
Right. And if I can try to summarize, is the reason why a nonprofit would do this is to keep their stakeholders in the fold, whether it's a donor or a program recipient, right? It's about giving each of them an experience that makes them want to, I mean, it doesn't alienate them, first of all, and it makes them, I hesitate to use the phrase, makes them want to stick around, but I can't think of a better way to phrase that. Can you?
Well, I do a lot of work with engagement ladders as well. And so I think maybe more than stick around, it's about how are you bringing people closer into your organization? You know, so when people are, you know, following you on social media, how are there ways you're engaging them to then, you know, donate $20 in your next Giving Tuesday, you know, and then taking those people and lifting them up to the next, you know, next level of engagement that you'd like them to. So it's really about helping people understand the work that you do at the level they're ready to understand it, and also understanding when they're ready to, you know, be lifted into that next level of engagement, you know, building a path for them and trying to help make your efforts match the stage that they're at.
Understood. Emily, if a listener wanted to be in touch with you, how would you suggest they do that?
They're welcome to email me at emily@teenybig.com. I'm also very active on LinkedIn. And then you can also visit my website for more information at teenybig.com.
Teenybig.com. I'm definitely going to be doing more of that. And I'm going to encourage nonprofits to think about human-centered design. I think this has been a pretty enlightening conversation for me. Thank you for making the time to do this today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
To our listeners, thank you for joining us for this episode. We invite you to be a part of these conversations. If you have an idea for the program or would like to be a guest on a future episode, please drop us a line via our website, nonprofitsnapcast.org. In the meantime, we'll see you with another episode in a few days.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.